Well, good morning. I think I see some kids out there. This is a story for all ages, but I'll do a lot better job of it if I can have some help up here. So, any kids used to coming on up? Okay, great. I'm going to do this so that everyone can see. First, I'll show the grown-ups. These are religious icons for me. There's another one on this side, too. These are photographs for me. This is where I see God. I see God in these photographs. Now, this was taken by a telescope whose name starts with, well, actually, let me tell you what it rhymes with. It's a space telescope whose name rhymes with bubble. What is it? The Hubble Space Telescope, exactly, exactly. And in the Hubble Telescope, this bottom picture here is called the Pillars of Creation. And right here, our solar system all the way out to Pluto. Pluto, of course, now, is it a planet anymore?
No.
What is it? A dwarf planet. Okay, all the way out to Pluto. See, they know all this stuff. All the way out to Pluto would be as big as this little purple dot. So this is huge. Right up here in this golden part right here, this is where baby stars are being born right now. Did you know that when I was your age, nobody knew where the chemical elements came from that are in our bodies right now, and now we know that they're born inside of stars? Nobody knew that. Just like everybody thought Pluto was a planet back in those days, right? Now we know it's a dwarf planet. This is a picture here of what our sun is going to look like 5 billion years from now. When our sun dies and sends back all the carbon that it created in its lifetime, it's going to, what's in the left in the little center, the little white dot? Anybody know? It's a white, kind of like Pluto, yes? White dwarf, exactly. So here we have birth of stars and death of stars. And you know what? We are the first people on planet Earth to know that stars are born and stars die. Other people looked up at the sky and that they thought the stars, just like God, were immortal, that they never died. And you know what? We are very, very grateful that stars die now, because we would not be here if stars didn't die and recycle back to the cosmos what they created. Our sun right now is creating helium inside. Hydrogen that's been there since the beginning is now being squeezed into helium that you find in birthday balloons, right? Our sun's creating that. And then when our sun turns into an elder, a red giant, it's going to take that helium and squeeze it into carbon. Every single atom of carbon in your cells was once inside a giant star that lived and died before our sun was born. What kind of atom do you have inside of your bones? Starts with a ca. Yes. Blood. Oh, we have blood all through our bodies, you know? And what makes our blood red? It's a metal you find in cars. It starts with Yes. Iron makes our blood red. Iron was once inside the belly of a giant star that lived and died before our sun was born. Calcium is in our bones. Nitrogen in our bodies. What are we breathing? Let's take a deep breath right now. What did we just breathe in? Air. And what's in the air? Yes. Oxygen. Every single atom of oxygen we breathe was once inside the belly of a giant star that lived and died before our sun was born. Any of you recycle anything? Any of you recycle? What do you recycle? Paper and bottles. Okay. Good. Yeah. What do you recycle? Lots of things. I bet lots of things. Well, you know what? Stars recycle too. Everything that they created, when they die, they send back to the galaxy so that baby stars, when baby stars are born, those baby stars now have carbon and nitrogen and iron and silica and calcium all around them so that planets can be born. We're the first people to know that. Now, I'm going to ask you a big question. What is the ceiling made of? Wood. And what is wood made of? Stardust. You see that? Everything is made of stardust. What are you wearing? And what's the shirt made of? And what's cotton made of? Stardust. Everything is made of stardust. What did you eat for breakfast today? Cereal. And what's cereal made of? Stardust. Final question. What did everybody here poop out yesterday? Stardust. All right. This morning's theme is Death Through Deep Time Eyes. And in recognition of that, we'll start off with a moment of silence, because for each of us here, death has played a very important part in our lives. For some of us, it's very present right now. Chance of flowers here, donated by Betty Arnold for her brother and parents. Some of us, our own mortality or that of a beloved may be close in our minds right now, or celebrating an anniversary of a death. But this is a deep topic for us, so let us begin with a moment of silence, beginning and ending with the bell. Stars are born and stars die. Along the way, these stars fashion the very atoms of our bodies. Is this a universe we say yes to? Mountains are born and mountains die. Along the way, these mountains create the particles of sand and clay that blend with dead plants to become soil. Is this a universe we say yes to? Species come and go. Along this odyssey of evolution, marvels emerge, eyes, limbs, feathers, song, terror, love. Is this a universe we say yes to? Cells are born and cells die. In the embryo, the winnowing yields fingers and toes, fins and wings. Is this a universe we say yes to? Baby animals are born in abundance, and myriad plant seeds are cast to the wind. Along the way, most of these children will become food, supporting the vast ecological web of life. Is this a universe we say yes to? Ideas are born and ideas die. Along the way, they nourish the human journey onward, inward, outward, in an arc of wonder that now embraces 100 billion galaxies. Is this a universe we say yes to? Each of us is born and each of us will die. Along the way, our awareness of death urges us to live fully, to give fully, and to take not one moment for granted. Is this the universe we say yes to? It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. I am a Unitarian Universalist evolutionary humanist, and I'm privileged, I'm not a minister, privileged to be able to stand most Sundays such as this, being able to speak on the one subject that most animates me. It's the reason why you're not going to see me reading a sermon here tonight, or this morning. It's because this is what I always talk about. My husband and I, 4.5 years ago, we gave up our home. I wouldn't call us homeless because we have hundreds of homes around the country now where we've been staying. We stay in people's homes, although we always do sleep in our unheated van. It's home. We gave up all our possessions and we went on the road. Some of you may have read about what we do in last spring's UU World, the purple cover issue on the wonder of evolution that spoke about our work, what we've been doing. We are evolutionary evangelists. I'm thrilled to be a Unitarian doing this because I believe that we will have the place where our congregations come alive in America with a creation story, because all of us can share this creation story. We have no scriptural literalists in our audiences. We nuance it differently as to whether we're a humanist, as I am, whether we're some kind of a theist or more spiritually inclined than I tend to be, also UU Buddhists, UU Pagans, we can all claim the 14 billion year story of evolution, cosmic evolution. Cosmic evolution. As with the evolution, the creation of all the elements and stars within previous generations of stars. Biological evolution, life, earth, and cultural evolution is all. This is our creation story. We're not yet teaching it, though. We're doing a great job in our UU congregation of talking about all the creation stories in the world, teaching our youth, as we must, about the various religious traditions in the world and our own heritage in the Western religious tradition. Wonderful way of teaching values. But we are the first culture who does not teach their children a creation story. The great philosopher of these times, Loyal Rue, also a member of IRIS, says, Carl Peters, Carl, hello. Wonderful. Carl is one of my mentors in this movement, all the people in the Institute for on Religion and in Age of Science. But Loyal Rue, also a member of that, good friend of Carl's, he wrote a book about 20 years ago called Amythia. Amythia. And what he means by that is a culture that has no grounding creation myth, that tells who we are, where we came from, what our relationship is with all beings. A wonderful testimonial here by the young woman, her connectedness with Earth. She gets that. She gets that from being alive today. And we can give her so much more in this kind of a creation story. We're the first culture that doesn't have it. And in fact, I tested a hypothesis I had about it a couple years ago in Florida. We tend to spend our winters in Florida. I think Carl does too, to some extent. And we were in Florida, and I was doing a religious education program for middle schoolers. And so I asked them the question, I said, give me some examples of creation stories around the world. And they were great, Native American, Genesis, some of the Greek stories and so forth. And then I stopped. And I looked at them and I said, what's your creation story? What's your creation story? Silence. Now, when I mentioned, you know, the Big Bang, what I like to call the Great Radiance, that's a sacred name for the Big Bang, the Great Radiance, they got it. They said, oh, yeah, we're learning about that in science class. It's not a big part of their church curriculum. That's science. It is their creation story. They're not going to hear in science class that they are made of stardust. They're going to learn the chemical elements. Let me show you a new version of the periodic table I made. I use this in a longer Stardust program I do with kids, even elementary school. New periodic table of elements, color-coded by the kinds of stars in which they're created. Red giants, like our sun will become 5 billion years from now, carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen is created in them. The big blue stars, most of the stars we see in the night sky are bright enough, the big blue ones create all the others. And then in the instant of a supernova explosion, the heavy metals. Any gold, silver that you're wearing, created in the moment of a flash of a supernova star that lived and died before our sun was born. And I always say this with kids, lived and died. There is no more there's nothing wrong with death than through this stardust episode, how the very chemical elements came into being. And that could not have been done by our Unitarian and our Universalist forebears. It was only discovered in 1957. That's all the time that we've known that the material, the atoms in our bodies were once inside ancestor stars that died before our planet and our sun were born. This is magnificent. I think about what would other cultures have done with this as a myth had they known it. We can do that for our children. And there's a whole lot of reasons why this is important. Give you a couple stories when I've done the Stardust with kids, emphasizing this point, the stars that lived and died before our son was born, the kind of stories that come from it. I talk about the ancestor stars, the stars before the stars we can see here that created the atoms, and I'll ask the children, I'll say, what's an ancestor? And there's always someone there who will know and say something like, well, an ancestor is someone in your family who's died. Someone in your family who's died. That's what an ancestor is. So then I'll ask them, I'll say, Do any of you have a grandparent who's already become an ancestor? It's elementary school, I ask. When I'm in middle school ages, I'll start asking, anyone have a parent who's already become an ancestor? But in middle school, I'll say, anyone has a grandparent? And there'll be a few hands that are raised. And I remember once, there was a boy who said, and after I'd done the Stardust thing, he raised his hand proudly and he said, my grandma became an ancestor January 26th of this year. I never use the phrase passed away. Always been an ancestor or died. After a Stardust program, I tend to we do a little ritual where we sing a song about we are made of Stardust. And I'll have the kids put a little glitter on their foreheads, signifying everything Stardust, but some things look more like Stardust than others. And then I'll pass around the chime and say, did any of you learn anything here that you didn't know before and you think you want to remember for the rest of your lives? And I'll get all kinds of answers on that one. I remember once there was a little girl who said, rang the chime and said, I learned that my grandmother will die. She was young, about 7 or so. It was the first time where she'd really taken in that there could be members in her family, particularly the elders, who will die, that death would touch her own family. And what a privilege it was for me to be the one to introduce her to that, and that I could do it through Stardust and with song and glitter. When I was 13, my sister and I were in a congregational church at that time. I was welcomed into the world in a Unitarian church, but it folded. And so my mother started going to a congregational church. And my sister and I had been going to confirmation classes. She was 14, I was 13. And we were standing outside the church on the very last day, the last Sunday of our confirmation class. It was Palm Sunday, 1966. And my mom was supposed to pick us up, and we were waiting and waiting. I don't know how long went by, and finally a neighbor came to pick us up. My mom didn't come because my father had dropped dead of a heart attack that morning. So here I was. I just get out of confirmation class. And looking back on it now, I don't think I was given anything in my religious instruction to help me not grieve less about death, but to have a cosmic container to safely hold it. I didn't have that. I railed against the universe. My father was buried on my 14th birthday. That is a rite of passage into adulthood. And I think that's probably the reason why I'm so committed when I'm given an opportunity to talk with kids about one thing. I've written 3 books in evolutionary biology. That's my specialty. Popular science writer before I got on the road, evolutionary biology. But I leave biology behind. And I talk about Stardust. It's a way to give kids a cosmic container to hold death so that when death does come, no matter how horrible it makes us feel, at least there's a cosmic container to hold it. At least we know that even stars die, and thank goodness they do. Because without the death of stars and the recycling of all the atoms they've created back into the galaxy, such that later generations of stars can use their creativity to form planets, or perhaps have life around them. Without the death of stars, there would be no planets and no life. And we're the first culture to know that. We have a creation story that is magnificent. We can teach about mountains. And were it not for mountains dying and eroding, there would be no soil. Were it not for the cells in an embryo, a little human embryo in the womb, were it not for the cells dying between the fingers, we would have webbed hands and toes. There's some are born when that happens. And of course, those who of us have been touched by cancer in some way, those are cells within our bodies right now who don't know that it's time to die in behalf of the whole. We have this extraordinary knowledge about the role that death plays, the creative role that death plays in the universe. I was doing a program for Montessori children, and I asked the kids, I said, do you think it's a good thing or bad thing that our son is going to die? I'm not hesitant to talk about that. I try to help them know that it's not going to be for a long time from now. We don't have to worry about it. And I have all kinds of answers. The A students will say, well, it's a good thing our son will die because without the death of stars, there could be no planets in their life. Got that one. Others will say, these are the kind of the trekkers, say, well, by then, humans will have all kinds of technology to go and live on a planet around another star. There are also those who say, well, it won't be a good thing for the humans and the animals alive when it happens. And then there's others who simply say, you think I'm going to worry about what's going to happen 5 billion years from now? We humans may extinct ourselves in 100 years. I never felt that way in the 50s or 60s. That wasn't part of my consciousness. That's part of kids' consciousness now. What about our culture? Where does death, I mean, a lot of people think, well, it's an understanding of what happens with death. It's part of the whole religious impulse. What I'm talking about here has nothing to do with the diversity of views that we have right here in this congregation about what happens to spirit, soul, or consciousness after death. Nothing to do with that. We still hold those views. Those views are beyond any scientific yes or no kind of a thing. We have different beliefs. But we can all share the understanding that the material fact of our bodily death, of mountains' death, of stars' death, that everything dies, we can all share that as a crucial part of our creation story that teaches us about the cycles of life, the circle of life, the Lion King spoke of. Our culture has a very interesting, might I say, interesting relationship with death. Death is my spiritual path, not just because of the catastrophe when I was a youth, but on the bright side of it, I had the privilege of being the home care person for my mother when she was at hospice care at home while she was dying. I was there to hold her hand, the only one there, hold her hand while she was dying in the middle of the night. People sometimes ask me, they say, well, what's the most fabulous thing that's ever happened in your life? And I say, helping my mom die the way she wanted to, where she wanted to, fighting to get her the medications that her doctor was going to deny her. This is our culture. This is our culture's view of death. And here's where it comes from. Here's where it comes from. There are creation science museums in various parts of the country. That's the biblical literalist supporting the six-day literal creation. And there was a news article about someone who's just now building, the head of a creation science museum being built south of Cincinnati. And he was quoted as saying, nearly all the museums in the country are teaching that dinosaurs lived millions of years ago. Right? Of course. But the Bible teaches clearly, and I believe thoroughly, that the earth was created in 6 literal days, and nothing died until Adam sinned. Now, some of you may know that. I heard a couple, you got that. I was raised congregational. I didn't know that. I didn't know that nothing died until Adam sinned. That wasn't what I was taught, but this is being taught in a biblical literalist context. Creation Science Museum in Santee, California, I stopped in there, and here's in their exhibit of death, I'll read a few excerpts from the pamphlet that went with it. Most people are familiar with the creation evolution issue, yet not many people realize the importance of death to each view. The fact is that for evolution, death is a sort of creative force. Those who believe in evolution must believe that death has always existed. Absolutely. Without the death of stars, there could be no planets and no life. You've got that right. However, those who accept the Bible believe that death is a punishment for sin. Death must have come into existence after Adam fell. Now, here's one of the, it's only in the New Testament, here's one of the chapter and verse readings. This is Paul, letters to the Romans. He writes, Wherefore, as by one man, Adam, sin entered this world, and by sin, death, so death passed upon all men. Biblical creation story interpreted this way, underpinning our culture, is that there's something wrong with death. In a perfect world, there would be no death. It was only because Adam sinned. We are the responsible, not only for the fact that humans die now, but because everything dies, animals and everything. We're responsible for that. That's our creation story. Goes on to say here, if we believe that death has always existed, then we make a mockery of the death of Christ. I never knew that. If death is not the penalty for sin, then Christianity is meaningless. The death of Christ was made necessary because of man's sin. Man's sin brought death, which in turn brought God's Son to pay the penalty in our place. Now that's an interpretation of the Genesis story. It's not the only one that needs, not the only interpretation that needs to be made of the Genesis story. Last fall, I was ill with the flu for about a week, and I didn't want to read science books. So I decided to read the Quran. The home we were staying in had a Quran there, and I read it. And I was stunned to come across this passage. In the Quran, Allah said, "O Adam, you and your wife dwell in the garden and enjoy its good things as you wish. But do not approach this tree, or you run into harm and transgression." Then Satan began to whisper suggestions to them, bringing openly before their minds all their shame that was hidden from them before. Satan said, "Your Lord only forbade you this tree, lest you should become angels or such beings as live forever." Lest you should become angels or such beings as live forever. Opposite interpretation of the Genesis story. Opposite interpretation. It's that we were striving to be immortal that brought us our fall. And so here we are, standing in a culture now where we can start to teach our kids the Stardust story and know that death is natural and generative. I'll close with one story. It happened in Durango, Colorado, where Michael and I were given a retreat this summer for UUs. And there was a young woman with two sons who came up to me, and she said, "When you were here a year and a half ago and did the Stardust program, I brought my two sons to your program." And I didn't think my youngest, who was about 3 and a half at the time, would pick up anything. But obviously he did, because here's what he told me. And here's using the woman's voice. "I was telling him recently about something that had happened to our family a while ago, and he asked him, he said, 'Mom, was I born yet?' And I said, 'No.' He said, 'Oh, was I in your belly yet?' 'No.' He said, 'Ah, I must have still been Stardust.'" Tell me a creation story more wondrous than that of a living cell forged from the residue of exploded stars. Tell me a creation story more magical than that of a fish hauling out on the land and becoming amphibian, or a reptile taking to the air and becoming bird, or of a mammal slipping back into the sea and becoming whale. Surely this science-based culture of all cultures can find meaning and cause for celebration in its very own cosmic creation story.